At the shuttle field, the only media wore the green and scarlet uniforms of the Altiplano Central News Agency. No one tried to speak to her. No one tried to crowd close. She knew that her walk from the shuttle through the terminal to the waiting car would be only one clip in the finished story, narrated by a senior analyst. No one would try to interview her. Here, that was considered rude and disrespectful. Her father, backed by a wedge of other officers, gave her the same formal salute Bertol had. She returned it, and he gave her the semi-formal hug and kisses, not fatherly, but from commander to junior about to be honored. She was introduced to his senior aide and to the next senior. She was led through a corridor where a solid block of militia provided complete privacy. In their terms, which meant from civilian eyes, for her few moments in the ladies' retiring room. There, she found two tiring maids ready to apply fresh makeup and attempt to do something about her flyaway hair. That ended in a spritz of scented stuff, which would leave her scalp itchy for 2 days. But this once, she didn't mind. In moments, they had whisked off her RSS uniform jacket, pressed it, and after a look at the shirt beneath, insisted on replacing it with a clean one from her luggage. Refreshed, and to her surprise, cheered by these ministrations, Esme came back out to the corridor.
It's only one cloud, and it might not rain.
It's only one bullet, and it might miss. I'm not taking the chance. When her hair gets wet... Oh, there you are, Esmea. There's a line of storms moving into the city. We're going to go by car.
It's not nearly as impressive. And it's not as if you expected her to do any real riding.
Esme had assumed by car. She'd forgotten that on Altiplano, all ceremony involved horses. She thanked some unknown deity for the gift of a possible rainstorm and her father's distaste for the frizzy mess her hair became if it got damp. At least no one from Fleet was here to make a joke about a backwoods military that still used horses. Of course, the parade still had horses, even though she was in a car. From the protection of the car, she watched the perfectly drilled cavalry swing into position before and behind, the horses moving in unison, their glossy haunches bunching and relaxing. The riders, their backs upright, hands quiet, faces set in a neutral expression that would not vary if a horse stood up on its hind legs, not that one of those well-trained animals would. Beyond the horses, a crowd on the sidewalks, faces peering from the windows of the taller buildings. Some of them waved the gold and red Altiplano colors. She had not been home for just over 10 standard years. She had left as a gawky teenager, who in memory seemed the very model of adolescent incapacity. Nothing had fit, not her body, nor her mind, nor her emotions. From not fitting at home to not fitting in the Fleet Prep School had been a tiny, natural transition. By the time she had graduated from the academy, she had expected to be the odd one out, the one whose reactions were not natural. She had not realized how much those feelings had been due to age, and then the real displacement of leaving her home world before her adult identity had solidified. Now, in the light of Altiplano's sun, with her body held by Altiplano's gravity, she began to relax, feeling at home in a way she had not since she was a little girl. The colors were right in a way they had not been for years. Her very bones knew that this gravity, not one standard G, was the right gravity. When she stepped out of the car and walked up the red stone steps of the palace, her feet found the right intervals without effort. These steps were the right height, the right depth. This stone felt solid enough. This doorway welcomed. This air smelled right and felt right all the way down to the bottom of her lungs. She looked around at the people now crowding into the hall around her. Humans were humans, but the shapes of humans varied with their genome and the worlds they lived on. Here, the bone structure looked familiar. These were the faces she had known all her life. Prominent cheekbones and brows, long jutting chins, eyes set deeply under thick eyebrows. These long arms and legs, big bony hands and feet, boxy joints. These were her people, her look. Here she fit in, at least physically.
Esmea, Sword Semsalas.
Esme turned. Her ears had already adapted to the Altiplano dialect, even in her family's less obvious form, and she had no trouble understanding the welcome she'd just been given. She didn't immediately recognize the wizened old man in front of her, stiffly upright and wearing the brilliant braid of a former senior NCO. Retired Master Sergeant Sebastian Coron had been part of her life as far back in childhood as she could remember, always crisp and correct, but with a twinkle for his commander's elder daughter. She thanked him for his congratulations in the formal phrases that brought a broader grin to his face.
And your family? Your body sons and heart daughters? And don't I remember that you have grandlings now?
Before he could answer, her father had extended his own hand to Coron.
You can come visit later. We need to get her upstairs.
Coron nodded, gave Esme a stiff, short bow, and stepped back as her father led her away.
I hope you don't mind. He's so proud of you, you'd think he was your father. He wanted to come.
Of course I don't mind.
And he wants to hear about it direct from you, at least some of it.
That's fine.
Esme would rather tell old Coron than any of the fresh-faced young militia officers now surrounding them. Coron had taught her more of the basics than her father probably knew. She had pored over the handbooks on small unit tactics under his watchful eye all one summer down in Varsimla.
He does get a bit carried away, but he saved my skin often enough.
Her father looked ahead to the upper hall, where a cluster of men in formal dress waited in a semicircle.
Ah, there we are, the long table advisors. Did you have time in the car?
She had not, but that's what the earplugs were for. Most of them were men she had met before, in the way that the children of a household meet distinguished guests. The current long-table host, Ardrey Castendas Garland, had once slipped coming into their dining room and knocked over the little table with the hot towels on it. Her great-grandmother had scolded her for staring.
Esme, Lieutenant Suisa, it is an honor.
Esme allowed herself an interior smile. Altiplano lacked the right honorific for someone like her. Female, a military officer, a hero. She felt conflicting impulses to help him out and to let him stew in his problem. They, after all, had wanted to make her a hero.
My dear, I'm sorry, but I keep remembering the sweet child you were. It's hard to grasp what you've become.
Esme could cheerfully have slapped him. She had been a sulky, awkward teenager, the successor to an awkward child. Not sweet, but difficult and strange. And what she was now should be simple enough to grasp. A junior officer of the regular space service.
I think it's clear enough.
She didn't recognize the other man. Opposition leader, her earplug said. Orias Leandros. He smiled at her, but the smile was intended for the host. He would make political profit of her, he thought. Esme didn't like either of them, but she knew where her family duty lay.
Host Garland, you can be no more amazed at my present predicament than I am. My father tells me you plan an award, but you must realize you do me too much honor.
Garland shot the briefest glare at his rival.
Not at all. It's obvious that your family inheritance of military ability continues down the generations. No doubt your sons...
He'd found himself trapped again in the assumptions of Altiplano and the usual phrases. What would have been a fine compliment to a man sounded almost indecent applied to a woman.
It has been so long. Perhaps you would introduce me to the other advisors?
Of course.
How had Garland ever been elected host when he was still as clumsy in word and deed as ever? But he got through the introductions well enough, and Esme managed to smile with the right intensity at all the right people. The awards ceremony itself felt odd, because Esme could not feel anything at all. She was too aware of the faint murmur of the earplug, coaching her through the required lines, of the expressions on the faces around her. The embarrassment she'd felt when first told of the award could not penetrate the concentration needed to do it right. The star mount itself, a disc with the blue and black enamel representing a mountain against the sky, the little diamond glittering at the peak, aroused neither pride nor guilt. She bent her head to let the host put the wide blue and gray ribbon around her neck. The medal felt lighter than she'd expected. Then it was only a matter of standing in the line, saying the ritual greetings and thanks to those who filed past her until the last of the line, a white-haired old lady related to Esme's grandmother in some complicated way, had passed from her father to her and from her to the host. She had a few minutes to sip the tangy fruit juice and taste the pastries. Then her father hurried her into the car again for the trip home. She would like to have stayed longer. She was still hungry, and some of the faces that had blurred past had been friends once. She would have liked a chance to shop in town, to get herself some new clothes. But she had no more to say about it than when she'd been a schoolgirl. The general said it was time to leave, and they left. She tried not to resent it.
Papa Stefan. He didn't feel well enough to come in, but he had planned a family reception.
Esme could not imagine Papa Stefan anything but well. He had been white-haired even in her childhood, but vigorous, riding and working alongside his sons and grandchildren. Things had changed then. She had known they would, eventually, but it was hard to feel the same gravity, breathe the same air, recognize the same smells, and think of change. The buildings they drove past, the substantial stone blocks that housed stores and banks and offices, were the same she had always known. Outside the city, the grasslands surged up to the mountains, as always. Esme looked out the window, relaxing into that familiar view. The Black Teeth, between which dark spires lay the legendary lair of the Great Worm. As a child, she'd believed the dragon stories were about her own world. She had believed the lair was stuffed with dragon's treasure. She had been bitterly disappointed to find out that the Great Worm was the code name of the Rebel Alliance that had, so legend went, massacred the original owner of Altiplano and all his family. A school field trip to the lair showed it to be a perfectly ordinary bunker built into the cliff on one side of a canyon. South of the Black Teeth were the other peaks of the Romilo Escarpment, lesser only by contrast to the teeth. Esme squinted across the kilometers of shimmering light, looking for the gap in the line, the grassy embayment of her family's estancia. There. The trees marked it out, the long lines of formal plantings along the road and the drives. The car slowed, pulling off the road.
I don't know if you still observe, but it's customary when someone returns from a long journey. And anyway, I'm going to light a candle.
Esme felt the heat rise to her face. Bad enough to forget, but to have her father suspect she'd forgotten was worse.
I too.
Esme clambered out of the car, stiff and feeling even more awkward than stiffness would explain. She hadn't thought of the ceremony since she'd left home. She wasn't sure she remembered the words. The shrine, built into the Estancia gate wall, had a row of fresh flower wreaths laid out below the niche. She could smell the faint sweet scent of the wreaths, and the stronger aroma of the great trees that loomed above. Even as an imaginative child, Esme had never been able to see any meaning in the blurred shape of the statue in the niche. Now she saw with fresh eyes, and it still looked like a grayish, shiny, melted blob, taller than it was wide. Around its base, the candle cups were clean as always, the little white candles in a box to one side. Her father took one, set it in the green glass cup, and lit it. Esme took another, lit it from her father's flame, and got it into a cup without burning her fingers. Her father said nothing, and neither did she. They stood side by side, watching the flames writhe in the breeze. Then he plucked a needle from one of the trees and laid it in the flame. Blue smoke swirled up. Esme remembered to stoop and find a pebble to lay in the wax of her candle. Back in the car, with the windows now open to the steady breeze, her father still said nothing. Esme leaned back, enjoying the many shades of green and gold. The drive, bordered with rows of narrow conifers, ran straight for a kilometer. On the right were the orchards, past blooming now. She could just see knots of green fruit on some limbs. On the far side, the first plums should be ripening. On the left, the family polo fields mown in crisscross patterns. Someone was out there, stooping, stamping divots back in. Nearer the house, flower gardens burst into riotous color. The car swept around the front, into the wide, graveled space large enough to review a mounted troop. It had been used for that years back. A broad portico shaded by tangled vines thick as trees at the root. Two steps up to the wide double door. Home.
Not home now.
Nothing had changed, at least on the surface. Her room, with its narrow white bed, its shelves full of old books, its cube racks full of familiar cubes. Her old clothes had been removed, but by the time she came upstairs, someone had unpacked her luggage. She knew without asking what would be in each drawer. She undressed, hanging her uniform on the left end of the pole. It would be taken away and cleaned, returned to the right end of the pole. Presently, the right end of the pole had two outfits she did not own. Someone's suggestion of what to wear to the family dinner. She had to admit they looked more comfortable than anything she had bought off-planet. Down the familiar hall to the big square bathroom, with its two shower stalls and its vast tub. After shipboard accommodations, it seemed impossibly large. But just this once, she slid the door marker to long bath and grinned to herself. She did like long hot baths.